Market Musings Podcast with Fairbairn and Russell. Hello and welcome to the Market Musings Podcast on Stockbox, where today our guest Oliver Friesen, the CEO of Golden Metal Resources, is joining us today, alongside, of course, Kenny, the usual. So, hi, Oliver, first of all, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on here, Mark and Kenny. Looking to catch up.
It's good to be talking to you again, Oliver. I know we did a Market Musings with you originally, where, of course, we did the traditional Market Musings approach, talking about your background and where you've come from and what led you to Golden Metal Resources. But we're going to treat this one more of a casual chat about how things have gone since IPO, and just have a real sort of catch-up generally and see what questions come up. And, of course, Kenny, you're joining us. Well, I know you're keen to learn a bit more about some of the gold aspects of the company, aren't you?
Yeah. I mean, I think, first of all, Oliver, great to have you on. It's been quite a while since we've done that podcast. It's probably well over a year, to be honest. Time just flies by. But I just wanted to kind of point out to investors, you know, there's been a lot of focus on Pilot Mountain, and rightly so, but it's good to explore the other properties in the portfolio as well, because they all have merit. So we can come on to that in due course. But as Mark says, it was, you know, it's been quite a journey to the IPO. It probably took longer than you guys wanted, you know, but obviously market conditions dictate everything, along sometimes with the FCA, etc. But looks like since IPO, you know, you've really put the accelerator down. You know, the news flow has been, you know, every week there's been an RNS, and you seem to be, you know, building up a lot of momentum in the business. Is that how you feel it's going?
Yeah, no, I mean, definitely in terms of timing, you know, we were a pretty eager bunch and we were ready to hit go on the IPO. But like you said, you know, market conditions in the latter half of 2022 were pretty horrendous. So we decided to make the tough decision to sort of delay things, but we're happy with where things are at now. I think, you know, the metals are ticking up here and, you know, I think things are maybe shaping up for a pretty interesting fall post kind of post summer holiday. So yeah, I think the timing actually worked out really well in our favor.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's, well, in these markets, it's just good to get it away. So it is, but I think you guys came in the market probably in about the April from memory. Is that right?
It was May, actually. May 10th.
Yeah.
So just over 2 months ago.
Over 2 months, yeah. No, it's definitely been a lot of news flow. I mean, there's one thing, just before we get on to the news flow, you know, and what you've achieved in those first 2 months. I've always wanted to ask you, and I don't think I asked you in the last podcast, Oliver, why Nevada? Was it planned? Did it happen by circumstance? You know, all the projects you've got are now in Nevada. So how did this come about? What is the backstory?
Yeah, no, it's an interesting one. So I moved to London over two and a half years ago now. So pretty much in the heart of COVID, I moved to London just in time for lockdown. But when I moved here, I sat down with Paul, the former CEO of Power Metal Resources, and we certainly identified the opportunity to bring new listings, new high quality listings to the UK markets. That's something that he had been working on at Power, and we got plugged in together, and we started to talk about how we can work together on a listing here in the UK. And Nevada was honestly the first place that came up. And I think the reason for that was, number one, when I moved here, I was shocked by the lack of Nevada-focused vehicles here in the UK. Really, there's no pure play Nevada-focused vehicles on the market. I mean, from where I came from in Canada, you know, there's probably 15, 20 Nevada-focused companies, exploration companies, that is. And that's for good reason. Nevada is one of the best places in the world to explore, and most importantly, to develop as well. So it's a fantastic jurisdiction. I also used to live in Nevada, funny enough. Yeah, so I actually lived in northeastern Nevada, and I worked for Barrick Gold at their Cortez Hills discovery. So I was part of the discovery team there. And we ended up proving north of about 15 million ounces of gold on what is a very significant Carlin-type gold mine. So I used to live there. I have good connections there. I know the state well. I know the permitting you know, regime. I you know, it's just a place I feel really comfortable with, which if you're bringing a new listing to, you know, the UK, which is 8-hour time zone away, it's really important that you have a good handle on the jurisdiction and you have good connections. So when we sat down, Nevada was honestly the first thing that came up, and we pretty much said, let's do it. And we started to put it together and build the portfolio over the next sort of 2.5 years. And then, as we mentioned, listed about 2 months ago. So it's been a really exciting journey so far.
And obviously the advantage of, sorry, Mark. No, you go.
Well, I was going to say, you've had all this, you used to live in Nevada, so you must know what it's like as a place to live and perhaps a place to do business. It's not the most hospitable of locations, is it?
in terms of how hot it is?
And barren? Yeah, that's what I mean. I think Kenny said earlier to me, it's like it's Death Valley, isn't it?
Well, Death Valley is in California, but yes, I mean, the thing about Nevada is it's so refreshing. So I've worked all over Canada, all over North America, all over the world, really. And probably Nevada, I would say, is by far and away the most mining friendly place I've been to. Now, obviously you get the Fraser rankings, which will, you know, actually quantify which is the best place to do business, which is Nevada's number one. But it's much different to actually go somewhere. And, you know, when you're there, you're not in Vegas. You might fly into Vegas, but all the work you're doing is in is based out of these small towns. So you always go to these small towns, and obviously you're going to the diners and the, you know, whatever, you're going to the grocery stores, getting all your supplies. So you actually meet people that live in these small towns, and they can always tell that you're not from there, and they love to talk. So they'll come up to you and they'll ask you what you're doing. And Nevada, by far and away, people come up to you and they go, what are you doing? What are you looking for? And they want you there. They're like, oh, you know, best of luck. Really, really hope you make a discovery. Hopefully you can put this into production. You know, we need jobs in this town. So it is hot, it is barren, but I think that's a good thing because there's a lot of open space where you're not, you know, next to a town, a big town, where there's people who don't want you there. It's a you know, somewhat, it's not very densely populated because it is very, you know, deserty and hot, but there's a ton of mining that's done there, and the people truly want you there, which is huge. And it's really encouraging to actually work there and meet these people and hear their stories.
I mean, that's a big selling point, isn't it? Being able to crack on and people want you there. We hear a lot of stories about First Nations problems in different parts of the world, and they can really stall a project. And you know, rightly so, it's only fair enough. But to not have that sort of aspect to worry about, but also, I mean, what's it like? Can you actually work all year round? There's no seasons, is there, to when you sort of, you know, as they call it, the field season in Canada?
Yeah, that's another big selling point about Nevada, and another reason that I think Nevada was our first choice is, I once again, I've worked all over North America, and you know, there's parts of Canada that I've worked in where you have a 3-month window that you can work because it's so glaciated, crazy mountains, everything's helicopter supported. And it's really difficult because you can't properly maintain news flow throughout the whole year. And most important, you can't actually push the company forward year round because you explore for 3 months and then you wait for your results and then you kind of just go dormant for 6 months. And that, I just think, you know, as someone who's viewed the market for kind of my whole career and invested myself, I stay away from companies like that. So obviously to you know, take the role as CEO is very important that we can push our narrative forward year round. And yes, it is hot in the summer and it can be cold in the winter, but it's relatively dry. So you don't get much snow in the winter. It can be quite cold. But it's a 12 month expiration season. It's relatively flat there. The roads are well maintained. And so you know, it's truly a 12 month expiration season, probably more than any other jurisdiction I've been to, where there's, you know, you can work year round, which is such a huge part of allowing us to push forward our narrative and achieve our goals, to not be hindered by the seasons.
Yeah, I don't think I'd be any good in Nevada, Oliver. I mean, anything above 20 degrees, and as Scots are hiding, we'd also need a beer garden with plenty of shade as well. So we'd have to work 100%. But no, it's certainly, you know, it's, I mean, I was trying to think, I was doing a bit of research earlier on, and I can't actually think of any other sort of UK-listed companies that have got the sort of flagship properties in Nevada. I mean, I might be wrong, but there was nothing jumped out the page, or nothing came to me. Is there any other companies that you're aware of that are exploring in Nevada that are listed in the UK?
I don't personally know of any. Maybe Mark does.
I don't know of any companies.
I don't know. It's quite unique. I mean, obviously,
yeah.
You know, there's quite a few companies currently in Ontario and in Canada. You've got First Class Metals, you've got Fulcrum, you know, you've got Panther, you've got there's another one as well. It used to be Pound, obviously. They've ended the projects into the First Class Metals. So there's quite a few sort of UK companies in that space. But like I say, I don't think there's anyone in Nevada that jumps out. I mean, I'm sure somebody when this podcast goes out will probably, you know, post up a link to a company, but there's not an abundance of them, put it that way.
Yeah.
So it's certainly fresh. It's different, a different approach, and I'm sure that appeals to a lot of investors because it's not the same old. It's different. It's a different feel to it. I mean, what is the setup? So I mean, obviously, Gold Metal Resources, you know, is the umbrella company. Do you have like a US subsidiary that you're 100% owned underneath that? And then do you have like an office presence or some sort of base out in Nevada where your team works from?
Yeah, so we have three US subsidiaries. And the reason for that is any claims that are owned in Nevada need to be held through a US-based subsid. So we have three Nevada incorporated LLCs, which hold the variety of projects in our portfolio. So it's and then obviously the Golden Metal Resources PLC is the parent company. And then we don't have a registered, we have a mailing office there, but we don't have an actual physical office because there's just no need. And you know, our one of our mandates is to keep G&A really low, which allows us to actually, you know, take the money we raise and put it into the ground. So it's all pretty straightforward. It's easy to operate there from a commercial standpoint, from a legal standpoint, and we have all the various things we need in place to do that.
Yeah. I suppose having three separate subsidiaries is nice and clean, and the off chance that you sell one of these projects, it's even easier to take it out of the equation because it's in a separate vehicle.
Exactly, and that's why we do it. That's exactly why we do it.
Yeah, it makes sense. So it does. Yeah, Mark, I think you were keen. I mean, obviously, you know, we've got within the portfolio, obviously, we've got tungsten. We've now got lithium. There's gold. There's copper. There's silver. So there's a nice spread of commodities in there. And I want to talk about the sort of copper, gold, silver later on. But Mark, I think you were keen to talk about the sort of critical minerals situation in North America. Mm. How it's all of a sudden it's became the hot potato that, you know, every time you go into some of the news channels, you know, it's all about tungsten or uranium or rare earths or lithium or copper. You know, it's just this everywhere we go now, it seems to be in your face. So I know that's something you follow quite a lot, Mark, so I'll hand it over to you.
I mean, yeah, you're right, it is sort of everywhere. You're hearing it coming from Ursula von der Leyen's lips, rare earth elements, the European Union, the head of the European Union there, using those three magic words that who'd have thought we'd be hearing them every day not so long ago. But we've heard about this critical metals list from the United States for a long time, but it actually seems like something might be finally happening when you actually see people, I keep saying this, but people from the US government going to mining conferences to meet, as investors would meet, other companies looking to invest in or make a return. They're actually not looking to make a return as such. They're looking to actually secure the raw materials out of the ground, because there is a big fear, isn't there, about where it's all sourced from, which is mostly China at the moment for a lot of these battery metals, which is a failure of Western policy, I think, over many, many years. And they're just waking up to the fact they might need to do something about it, considering geopolitical events. But it's definitely becoming a lot more in the focus, isn't it, Oliver? And I spoke to your chairman just this week, and we covered that. And as you mentioned, he was very much involved in the European Union and the UK's critical minerals strategy. And I asked him, is there a genuine fear? And he said, absolutely, yes. There's a genuine fear at government level. Where can we source these materials from? And the conversations, of course, we can't say too much about them until it's officially RNS'd from the company. But early conversations, they want to talk to you. They're really, really keen to actually talk to you. You think, we've got this big tungsten deposit. Oh, please come and talk to us. I'm not sure they had, you know, tea and scones in the White House, but certainly it sounds like the early sort of reaction there was certainly positive. I mean, what are you finding? Because there's a lot of funding available, isn't there, as well for certain projects at the moment from the US government?
Yeah, it's honestly, it's really the first time I think ever in human history that the government has been so, especially the US government has been so pro-mining. And I think it, as you mentioned, it's this really important shift that's occurred. I think, unfortunately, in the wake of the Russia-Ukraine war, where it became so clear how quickly various things can be weaponized, right? And so it's you know, the U.S. government is, of any of the Western countries, is putting the most amount of money behind this shift right now, and they're looking to shore up and secure the domestic supply and source of, you know, there's the critical minerals list is about 40 plus long. And as you mentioned, and rightly mentioned, China has a stranglehold on a large chunk of those, of which tungsten is one of the ones where they actually have the most control, China, which is therefore makes it one of the priorities, because when China, you know, mines and produces and exports, you know, 85%+ of total global supply, that is not a position that the Western world wants to be in. So, and I think, you know, you look at the news almost every week now, and we're seeing these escalations increase. I mean, China essentially banned the exports of gallium and germanium a week ago. And we all saw what happened to the prices of those two very unique metals, one of which has military applications. So it's this kind of this political tit for tat right now. And really the way for the U.S. to win on this front is to just support homegrown projects in a way they've never done before. And that's one of the reasons we're so excited about this proposition right now in 2023, is that this you know, this monumental shift is happening around us. And we think we're in a very, very fortuitous position to benefit from that. So, you know, as you mentioned, Mark, we can't talk too much about the ongoing conversations, but we did put out an RNS, which really outlined how important this strategy is for us, and how seriously we're taking it with the appointment of Chang Turkmani, various other things that we're working on or have submitted or are to submit. So and I think, you know, when you spoke to David, our chairman as well, he very much, I think, very eloquently put into perspective how important this shift is, and Golden Metals is finds ourselves right in the middle of that, with owning the largest undeveloped tungsten resource in the U.S. So really exciting times, and you know, this isn't something that's just going to be here for 6 months and everyone forgets about it. You know, the U.S. needs and wants to mine all of these metals themselves for the future. It's not okay, we'll go back to China in a year. No, they understand for the, you know, the rest of our lives, at least, the importance to actually supply and mine these things themselves. So it's we find ourselves at a really exciting time, especially here at Golden Metal Resources.
I agree. I think it's a very exciting time, as you say, almost unprecedented. And I know we've certain people in the sector have talked about a super cycle or a boom in the sector, which we know is very cyclical for a long time, but you can really see it now coming over the hill. And when we're talking about governments, it's all very well to talk about it, but we want to see some action, and we're actually finally starting to see that. But also what I like to see from GMET, Golden Metal Resources, is you're not just saying that the government are doing this, you actually are taking it seriously, like you say, with the appointment of certain people on the board who are actually able, who have experience in this and are going to drive that strategy. So you are clearly taking it very seriously, and it's a very real thing to go and explore there. I mean, what would you, Pilot Mountain is huge, and it's probably going to take a very long time to develop it. I mean, it, you know, what's the typical it's for 20 years or something to develop a mine. I mean, David was saying that, you know, there's potential here to fast track it. That's a great phrase that investors will love to hear, fast tracking into production. And I mean, it is possible, though, you know, with funding from government level, if that's going to actually happen, then you don't need to always go back to the market and raise and prove up things. You can get things into production fairly quickly, I would thought, on a small scale, and then just build and build, build and build and build, a bit like what Premier African are doing in Zimbabwe there. They've not done a DFS. They've not gone through all those studies. They know they've got a resource there. Let's get some production going and sort of, you know, get some cash flow and then build on that and do the studies as we're in production. Would that be a sort of a dream scenario, really, Oliver, to do that? And what would you have to do? What would you have to do at Pilot Mountain in order to get that government level funding and potentially get into fast track production?
Yeah, so it's an interesting point, Mark, because when it comes to fast track, and one of the other things that I don't know if we discussed previously, but you know, obviously the big one that people are very aware to is the funding coming from the U.S. government, the non-dilutive funding, but the other really important thing, and potentially even equally or more important, that the U.S. government is doing is they're actually very much shortening permitting timelines. Now, that's always been historically one of the main sort of choke points, as you might call it, when it comes to taking a project from exploration to mine, is the permitting timelines. And by the U.S. government saying, you know, here's a really important deposit on U.S. soil, you know, if they let it go through the normal permitting timelines, you know, that could take an extra 2-3 years to get that metal into the U.S. supply chain. So they're being quite prudent about it and saying, hey, we're gonna look to fund, you know, select projects, but also we're going to look to very much speed up and in some cases significantly speed up the permitting timelines and remove a lot of the hurdles, because that means that those metals can enter the supply chain in the U.S. a lot quicker. So when it comes to timelines for Pilot Mountain specifically, another just really important thing to note is the previous operator back in 2018 was actually planning on pushing this project forward to the mine scenario. And obviously the world looks a lot different now in 2023 than it does right now. But the great thing about that and the main takeaway point is the fact that because that was their goal, a lot of the really important de-risking kind of pre-development check boxes have all been completed, or a lot of them have been completed. And that includes, you know, metallurgical work, which has been done to a PFS level. That includes things like the environmental baseline work, which effectively identified no impediments to development. There was deals that were completed with Nevada Power, things, you know, associated with water were all done with. So all these really important, you know, when you want to put something into production, there's a long list of things that you need to complete. And a lot of the really important and a lot of the long lead time items were completed. So that gives us a huge leg up here as we look to continue to push this project forward. And another really important checkbox is offtake. And that's one that listeners might be aware that, you know, we signed a non-binding offtake agreement with the largest tungsten processing company in the U.S. for a tungsten concentrate offtake. So that's another important checkbox that we've now completed within, you know, a couple weeks, or I guess it was maybe 6 weeks after we listed, we were able to get that done. So a lot of these really important checkboxes have been completed, which means that, you know, our pitch to the government is, hey, you know, with some non-dilutive funding, we can really fast track this thing and solve your tungsten, you know, needs and wants a lot sooner than, you know, that 20 kind of year life cycle or timeline that you mentioned, Mark. So, you know, another just thing that's I find really interesting is that as of January 1st, 2026, so we're talking less than 2.5 years from now, the U.S. Department of Defense is actually banning all imports of tungsten from China, Russia, Iran, and North Korea. So just to talk about timelines and how important and front of mind this tungsten problem is in the U.S. right now, well, in less than 2.5 years, the DOD is banning imports of tungsten from their largest import partner. So I'll let that kind of sink in, but I think it should just really signify to listeners how front of mind this is and how you know, the fact that we could really fast track things here at Pilot Mountain with government support, and we could actually help them solve this issue not too far down the road here when the ban comes into effect.
Yeah, it's a perfect storm, but in all of us, so it is. You're maybe in the eye of the storm at the moment. It's coming, as you're saying, in the next couple of years with the supply crunch. And one thing I just want to highlight as well at Pilot Mountain, I mean, it's tungsten, but there's also a lot of copper, there's silver, there's some zinc in there as well. I mean, these are all credits that can help the economics of the project.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And the great thing is, as I mentioned, the metallurgical work has been done, and all three of those metals are recoverable into two concentrates. So the work has been done to say that those metals, actually we can produce those, and we can, if we were to mine it, those would actually be, you know, we could sell those metals. And just to put into context, now any investor can take the numbers from our presentation and run what the tungsten equivalent would be. But I can kind of quickly highlight those numbers just to put into context, you know, either the tungsten equivalent or copper equivalent. Well, the current in-ground resource stands at about 0.26% tungsten trioxide. And if you take that a tungsten equivalent, which takes into account the copper, silver, and zinc, as you mentioned, the grade effectively doubles to about 0.5% tungsten equivalent. And a lot of investors, you know, are much more familiar with copper prices. Well, if you want to take a copper equivalent, it works out to just around 2% copper equivalent. And like I said, any investor could take the numbers from our presentation and run the equivalents. But just to make it easier for you, those to kind of put into context how significant I think the other byproduct metals are. And another thing to mention is the garnet. And this is something that I don't think many people are familiar with, but there's significant garnet component as well, because it's a skarn deposit. So there's actually a very important garnet story, which we're looking into right now. So we'll certainly put out any updates that we can in the future. But that's another one to keep an eye on, is there's a potential another revenue stream here for industrial garnet, which if in the right form, it can actually sell for pretty significant amounts. So that's just another thing that we're working on. And this is, once again, this has all been disclosed by the previous operator, the garnet component. But there's another one. There could be potentially five metals or commodities here that we're looking to potentially exploit.
Yep. Yeah, there's definitely a news flow coming. I mean, obviously, you've had a lot of news for Pilot Mountain, but, you know, it's like a snowball rolling down the hill. You know, it's just gathering all the time. So, yeah, it'll be really interesting to see how the rest of 2023 pans out for Pilot Mountain. But of course, you've not just got Pilot Mountain. You know, obviously, you picked up the lithium project, you know, last week, I think it was, and maybe touching that at the end. But I just want to kind of not zoom in, but just a sort of high level overview of the three other properties that you've got in Nevada. Obviously, you've got they're all at different stages. You know, I think was it Golconda is drill ready. Might even be permitted for drilling and trenching. I think Garfield is trenching, and I think Stonewall's a bit, you know, more blue sky. Can you maybe just give us a sort of high level overview of each of these properties, Oliver, and what they offer, and then maybe what the news flow is going to be for each in the rest of the year?
Potentially? Yeah, of course. So I think this is the first thing to note is obviously, I think as you highlighted here with the projects in the portfolio and Pilot Mountain being the flagship, you know, if Pilot Mountain is a standalone asset in any company, and the fact that we have what I consider to be, you know, four other really excellent, more as you rightly mentioned, sort of more blue sky exploration opportunities, but, you know, effectively, you know, we've proven up some really interesting drill targets as well. So they're not like it's, you know, we need to go and start from square one here. There's been a lot of really excellent work that's been done by ourselves and by the previous operators. And these are all assets that are in the portfolio that are also moving forward. You know, they're being explored and they're being pushed forward here. So there's just, it gives our investors exposure to not only, you know, tungsten and the criticality of Pilot Mountain, but also, you know, we have a really interesting and exciting lithium opportunity, gold opportunity, as you mentioned, copper. And these are all metals that I think are really something that investors, you know, want to have exposure to right now. And rightfully so, these are kind of where things are going here. And you know, to start with the gold opportunity, you know, gold's pushing towards almost $2,000 an ounce here once again. And I think people, you know, it's sort of the main bellwether for the sector, and people are going, I need more gold exposure, right? And it as soon as it moves out of that downtrend, people start to really panic and go, I need some gold, I need some exposure to gold. So Goldcon is Summit, it's a bit of a technical story, so I won't go into too much detail here and put everyone asleep. But the main takeaway here is we're looking for what's called Carlin type gold. Now, Carlin type gold is a type of gold deposit that effectively has only ever formed in northern Nevada. And Carlin type gold is really significant because it has put Nevada on the map when it comes to gold mining, but also just mining in general. And the likes of Newmont and Barrick Gold, if you go to their websites, you'll see that their primary focus is in northern Nevada, and that's where most of their production comes from. Yep. And the reason for that is Carlin-type gold is a very unique type of gold system, which form typically very large and very high-grade deposits, as I mentioned, that are only found in northern Nevada. So when we, you know, sat down and wanted to build a Nevada focused vehicle, it was very important and almost paramount that we had a really exciting Carlin type gold opportunity. As mentioned, I used to work for Barrick Gold at Cortez Hills, which actually isn't too far from our Goldcon Summit project. But just to put into context how significant these deposits are, you know, if investors want to look at the presentation on our website, they'll see a map as to where our project is. And within about 25 kilometers, there's three significant gold mines. One of them is Turquoise Ridge, which has 13 million ounces of gold at 5 grams per ton. And then there's two other gold mines that are about 5 million ounces of gold right now that have been proven up. And then, you know, Cortez Hills, as I mentioned, the one I used to work on, that's north of 15 million ounces. Gold Strike is another gold mine, which is to the northeast of us. That's 50 million ounces of gold. So that's to just put into context that the, you know, these aren't little 500,000 to 1 million ounce gold deposits we're looking for here in northern Nevada. And kind of the quick elevator pitch here at Goldcon Summit is we have some really high grade gold that was found at surface within what are called the upper plate rocks. That includes a trench that returned about 7.6 meters at just under 20 grams per ton. But the main takeaway here is Carlin type gold forms in what are called the lower plate rocks. And any gold you find in the upper plate is typically indicative of gold that's been remobilized along subvertical faults from the lower plate rocks below. So the fact that we have really high grade gold at surface within the upper plate, and it's the lower plate rocks on our property which have never been drill tested. So that's really the main exploration thesis there is, you know, we're excited to go in there and do some low cost RC drilling and effectively to be the first ever company to test underneath of these really high grade trenches looking for what is effectively referred to as a feeder zone. So that's a project that's near and dear to my heart. Carlin type gold is a fantastic type of gold deposit, and I know those deposits quite intimately. So we're excited about pushing that one forward. And then, you know, Garfield and Stonewall, two other very interesting assets in the portfolio. Actually, the first RNS we put out post list was on Garfield, which sure enough identified two very significant copper and soil anomalies. Both of those have coincident high-grade copper in grab sample. One of those zones is about 1.5 kilometers by just under 1 kilometer. And that includes rock samples up to about 5.5% copper. And then the other zone is very significant as well. It's about 1.5 kilometers long. That has coincident rock, copper and rock of about 2.6%. So really significant copper and soil anomalies. We have coincident high-grade copper at surface. So those are really interesting targets. And, you know, we'll certainly be doing some more work on that. And then I can quickly just touch on the lithium as well, because that's a new addition to the portfolio. And funny enough, this property is actually about 3-4 kilometers from Pilot Mountain, which was a really fortuitous outcome because I was at the project and I was looking down into the valley and I saw this significant Playa Lake. And a Playa Lake typically signifies that you're close to, or our Playa Lakes often lie above lithium brine basins. So I'm looking down in this basin and going, look at that massive Playa Lake. What's the story there? So sure enough, got home and started doing some digging and found some really interesting parts of that basin that were unstaked. So we came in there and acquired those via staking, which means it's very low cost and we own 100%. And we'll put out another news release. We're doing some further historical data comp there. And in the release we put out, we've highlighted that we'll put out further details, technical details in the future here. So that's another one to keep an eye on. And lithium, especially lithium brines, can be quite significant. And Nevada is a fantastic jurisdiction to look for lithium. So we're in the right neighborhood. We're in the Kibby Lithium Basin. There's a discovery drill hole that was made only 250 meters from our claims, and the lithium brines, based on the data from the previous operator, show that that horizon is open in pretty much every direction and looks to extend onto our claims. And the zone that was hit within that discovery drill hole was 169 meters thick. So just to put into context how significant that could be as well. So a lot of value elsewhere in the portfolio, and you know, investors in Golden Metal get not only the flagship in Pilot Mountain and all the great things going on there, but you get exposure to, you know, things like Kibby and Golconda and Garfield and Stonewall. So it's a really well-rounded portfolio, and I think there's a ton of value to extract from every single one of those assets for our investors.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a compelling story. And, you know, as soon as this market turns on, I'm sure you guys will re-rate as the market starts to behave, hopefully, normally. One thing that just jumped into my mind there, we're talking a little bit copper and one of the other projects in Nevada, and it kind of ties into what we're talking about earlier on as well. Why is copper not a critical metal? Why is it not in the list in North America? It seems really weird that it's not included.
Yeah, it's actually a good question, and there's been a lot of stirrings of U.S. copper companies really lobbying the government to get it added, and it sounds like potentially they might get what they're looking for and it could be added here, but it's one that they're working on. I think one of the main reasons though is that if you look at the total global copper picture, there's a lot of copper production that comes from, you know, I don't think any country has more than say 10% of total global supply. So, you know, Chile is a big producer, the Congo is a big producer, Russia is a big producer, Canada is a big producer, the US. So it's a lot more spread out. Whereas, you know, the really critical ones are when, hey, China has 85% of total global mined supply. That's when the criticality, I think, really ratchets up. But they're certainly working on adding copper to the list as well, which would open it up to potentially, you know, government funding and things like that. But it's if you talk to anyone, what's the metal of the future to really electrify everything? Well, copper is going to be a critical part of everything, right? You know, the electric vehicles, which need the lithium batteries, well, it's copper wiring that runs through that whole car to power that thing. So copper is a super important one as well, which is why we love to have Garfield in the property, in the portfolio, and we're looking to continue to push that one forward.
Definitely. And just looking ahead for the next 6 months, I mean, we're just about to sort of, well, I'm seeing come out in summer, probably in the middle of the summer. I mean, what are these guys doing at the moment on the ground across the portfolio?
Yeah, so in terms of what we're doing or what we can talk about right now, there's not much I can say at this present point, Kenny. What I will highlight is I think, you know, those who have followed the story have seen that you know, we've been incredibly active, and you know, we've put out almost an RNS a week, or at least one RNS a week, but it's not just been fluff. I mean, I think every RNS, if you go back and look through them all, they've all been very material and exciting development. So that pace, you know, we're not going to all of a sudden just go quiet now. You know, it's we're kind of in the middle of the UK summer here, and August can be quite slow, but it doesn't mean that we're sitting back and taking the summer off. We're still pushing forward all and a bunch of various different corporate, commercial, and technical developments. So I can't allude too much as to what's coming down the line here, but I think I've discussed a few things that investors should keep their eye open for today. But once again, I can, you know, I think the last 9 weeks since we've listed with the feverish pace should give investors a flavor as to what they can expect for, you know, the rest of 2023 and beyond, really.
Yep, definitely.
Great.
Good stuff. Mark, sorry, I've been chatting away. I'll maybe let you come in and finish off.
What I was going to do was I was going to ask that question that you asked, Kenny. What's the sort of immediate future looking like? But you got there before me. So I'm happy. I'm happy. I've caught up on everything gold and metal resources. We've covered a few interesting topics there. So yeah, let's see if you can carry on, Oliver, with how you've set off. I'm sure you'll be planning to do so. But I've enjoyed this little conversation today, and I'm sure we'll be doing plenty more interviews before the end of the year. So thank you very much for your time today.
Yeah, that's great, Jess. I love this long form. It's good to actually just talk through things in a bit more depth and give, I think, investors and listeners a bit more flavor for what we're doing here at Golden Metal. So I appreciate you both taking the time and the good questions today.
No problem. Excellent. Well, thank you very much, Oliver. And we'll speak again in the not-too-distant future, hopefully.
Yeah, sounds good, Jens.
Thank you for listening to another podcast from Market Musings with Fairbairn and Russell. Tune in next time.